And we are back after quite a long hiatus, and I have had personal reasons to take a break and maybe even take a back seat while watching France go down the drain. Of course, for those who've been listening to me for the past couple of years, I'm of course pointing to the anti-separatism law, which was passed by Emmanuel Macron and his government to crack down on the capacity of Muslims to organize and be active members of a society, and of course at a general or at a national level to give the government more tools to crack down on civil society by accusing them of being against the Republic. We saw this law or that law being applied to Muslims first to shut down their organizations, to close down mosques, to criminalize religious and community figures, and we saw that law that was supposed to fight the so-called Islamist separatism, to quote the French President Emmanuel Macron, that law was taken to be further and used against environmental activists and various left-wing organizations. For those who've been following me on social media, you may have seen me comment on these procedures to shut down left-wing organizations with oftentimes the comment, quote-unquote, zero sympathy. The reason being that left-wing organizations in France have not really mobilized, if they ever did mobilize against this law. And for the umpteenth time, we saw these white majority organizations feel a bit safe as long as Muslims were being targeted. And for people like myself and others who have been warning, listen, when the government starts cracking down on a minority, you are just next. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Now, these supposed to be comrades failed to hear the message, and we have seen the left being threatened by the government. And at the same time, we also had some quite lessons, to say the least, from other organizations. I'm referring to Les Soulèvements de la Terre, environmental organizations, which showed the way to counter the government, whereas some organizations were still hoping for the government to kind of back down and tone down its criticism, and maybe by remaining quiet, things would go well. Well, they did not. And what this organization did, they mobilized their grassroots, they trained them, they gave the organizing tools to the greatest number of people, they reached out to people in show business, the cultural sphere in France, which is quite heavy in this country, and they managed to push back against the government by refusing to back down and taking the matter not only in court but also in the public space, be it on television, on social media, in the streets, in public assemblies. And I have to salute this organization, the Earth Uprising, in the way they refused to back down, and they refused to submit to the will of this highly authoritarian government. Now, of course, you know, after the passing of the anti-separatism law, my fear was that this podcast only turned into some kind of platform to comment every single, you know, event that was related to human rights violations. And there were so many of them that it became a bit overwhelming, and a question arose in the back of my head. Well, am I just here to comment on what the government is doing, or am I empowering those who are supposed to act and support us? And I had, to be honest, I had some answers from the feedback I received, you know, be it online or through people who were like, you know, close friends who received messages about my whereabouts. And I found out that the podcast had a loyal and committed audience, and they were asking what happened to the podcast, how come there is no more episodes being published, and what is Yasser's take on this or that. Now, I had to then question myself for this questioning about the launching of the podcast, and you know, though I continue to write for The New Arab, and I send my shout out to my editor, Amalia Boatia, who's constantly behind me with a stick in order for me to return my papers on time, something I'm terrible at, to be honest. And other than my writings on The New Arab, there wasn't much I was publishing. However, people ask me for my take on the Abaya, and me having pretty much left Twitter, and which became X under Elon Musk, I no longer feel, I just don't feel like, going back to it again. And the same thing with Facebook. And I didn't really comment on the Abaya episode, though there was a lot to be said, but I kind of refrained from doing so in order for me to see what would be the reaction, from the grassroots, from civil society, and from people in general. Now, let's start with the way French people reacted. I mean, before I even get into that later in this episode, let's talk about the event itself. On August 31st, Gabriel Attal, the new minister of National Education, which is the authority supervising our public schools. Well, at first, this guy never went to public school. He only went to private schools, which are secluded from the rest of our schooling system and are, of course, reserved for the wealthy people of this country. And this guy has absolutely no experience dealing with teachers, dealing with teacher unions, dealing with students, etc. He took the position after Papendiaï was sacked. I'm not gonna cry for him. I had respect for him as a scholar on a black history, as a scholar on racism, and the way he, and for him taking a public stance against racism. When it turned out, he joined the government of Emmanuel Macron, despite Macron's government having propped the far right and having given a platform to the national rally of Marine Le Pen and having made sure that Marine Le Pen gets through the election and confronts him in the second round of the presidential election of 2022. And the fact that the Macron government has taken all the themes imposed by the far right in public space and turned them into either legislation or new norms. So much so that, and I know you heard it before on this podcast, so much so that his Minister of Interior, Gérald Darmanin, blamed Marine Le Pen, quote unquote, for being too soft on Islam. And he made his point clear. He said, I do not mean Islamism. I'm talking about Islam. So this kind of, showed us how far this government went into normalizing far-right ideas. Let's not even talk about Emmanuel Macron praising Philippe Pétain, who was the guy who shook Hitler's hand and collaborated with the Nazis and orchestrated the deportation of Jews in France to the death camps across Europe, and the fact that Emmanuel Macron did not show any sympathy towards the millions of people who were falling victims of this normalization of far-right ideas at the highest levels of the government. So much so that, again, I'm, when people ask me, what do you think about Marine Le Pen, becoming president, I'm like, Marine Le Pen is already in power. She's not personally in power, but her ideas are being implemented by a guy like Emmanuel Macron, who supposedly came from the center-left and tried to appeal to the center-right. He deliberately conducted pursued a far-right agenda. And this government was joined by Papendiaï, a scholar on racism and slavery, and who knows better than that. So anyways, and Papendiaï joined the government, and in order for him to confront criticism coming from, the far right and the hard right and the conservatives and some on the left who are blaming him for having some kind of, a hidden sympathy towards Islamism, he threw under the bus a couple of kids who were caught praying in a school, and he did that to please the Conservative Party and the far right. So in order for him to show how tough he was in upholding French identity, he delved into Islamophobia, into conspiracy theories, and even the parents of those kids who are not Muslims said they are 9 and 10 years old and they were playing in the school's playground. How could we make this, how could we turn this into a national story and have the whole government comment on it alongside the most racist politicians of this country? So I'm gonna close the digression. Gabriel Attal, you know, comes as Minister of Education, and of course, instead of addressing the fundamental problems we have in our public schools, for instance, and this, I mean, like, these are only a few figures, I can't, you know, be exhaustive, but for according to SNES FSU, which is the first teachers union in France, 48% of high schools and grade schools, or what we call collège et lycée, are facing a shortage of teachers. They cannot hire enough teachers for their students. Other schools complain about overcrowded classrooms due to the lack of professors and the shutting down of, you know, sections by the government. Over 3,000 teaching jobs could not find the, you know, candidates. People no longer apply to become teachers. And this is what Gabriel Attal comes up with. The very first month he comes into office, there was nothing else on the table, and he knew that parents, unions, teachers, and school principals were waiting for something from him. What he gave them again was Islamo-diversion. Now let's put things into perspective, and let's say, you know, maybe there is an Abaya problem in France. First, once again, for the umpteenth time, the law on laïcité is about the neutrality of state services, not users of state services, which means the state is neutral. And those who use its services, being adults, for example, in administrations or in hospitals, are not obliged to conceal their faith. And so are students. They are users of state services, and the law on laïcité does not apply to them. What happened is we had a reinterpretation of laïcité in the early 2000s in order to turn laïcité into a tool of legal discrimination. This goes back to 2003. A guy called François Baroin from the Conservative Party handed a report to then Prime Minister Jean-Pierre Raffarin. And the report called Pour une nouvelle laïcité, or in English, For a New Laïcité, and that's important, a new laïcité. He clearly wrote black and white that after winning the struggle against the Catholic Church, laïcité now should turn its war against the visibility of Muslims in the public space. And knowing that doing that would violate fundamental rights, would violate all the international conventions signed by France on fundamental rights, and even violates the Declaration of Human Rights and the Citizen of 1789 and that of 1948, he says clearly, quote unquote, at some point, laïcité and human rights are not compatible. And it is in the name of this new laïcité that Gabriel Attal came on August 31st to prepare the return to office and return to school, the return of the government, what we call in French, la rentrée politique. And that was the main topic, the banning of the headscarf. Now, how big is the problem? First, there is no abaya problem, because the abaya should not fall under the definition of laïcité. Now, if it were an openly religious garment worn by state employees, that would be a different debate. But first, the abaya is not a religious garment, whether you wear it as a Muslim person or not. H&M and Zara and all these, you know, stores sell long dresses. So who is it going to be applied against, this prohibition? Of course, as you guessed it, against Muslim students. And for those who are a bit familiar with how this country is, you know, being turned into a, I don't know, some kind of a farce of a democracy, we had before that, of course, the banning of the headscarf in violation of laïcité. In the public space, we had the banning of the full face veil, again, in the name of security, so you should not conceal your face in the public space. And the banning of substitute meals for those who do not eat pork like Muslims, and of course Jews, but we did not see Jewish organizations standing against that prohibition, because it was mainly targeting Muslim students, if not exclusively. And now we have the banning of the abaya. Of course, abaya is difficult to define. It's a long dress. And it's a fashionable thing to wear a dress today when you are a teenager, a long one, long sleeves, and a dress that reaches your ankles. And this sends us back to 2015 when there was a campaign against Muslim students wearing long skirts. And many people rightly pointed to the hypocrisy of accepting long skirts when they were worn by non-Muslim students and by white women, but it became all of a sudden a problem if it were worn by Muslims. I even dealt with individual cases of student parents. They came to me saying, you know, now we have a school principal harassing my daughter because she's wearing a long skirt. Another one, and I remember she was a convert, and When she wore the long skirt, she had no problems until the day someone from school saw her putting a headscarf on her head in another street. And then they made the connection, oh, she's wearing a headscarf, therefore she's Muslim, therefore if she's wearing a long skirt, she should be punished for it. And that was back in 2015. Now, back to 2023, this campaign is again targeting Muslim students, and to quote the services of the state, according to the Ministry of Education, 300 students out of 12 million showed up with an abaya. 300 out of 12 million. How significant is that? How can this be a priority in a country that can't even hire enough teachers for its students, that cannot properly manage schools, that cannot even provide heating in some public schools in the banlieue of Paris and Marseille in the south? But this is a discussion taking place in France. Now, a Muslim organization, which I shall not name, you know, to avoid, you know, useless controversies on social media, this Muslim organization took the matter to the Council of the State, the highest administrative court in France. The problem is, the argument was that this banning of the abayas violated Muslims' fundamental rights. And therefore, that organization gave the stick with which Muslims would be beaten. Because then the government said, oh, well, you know what, since you call it a religious government, schools are supposed to be neutral, and therefore banning the abaya does not violate people's fundamental rights. However, we had to go back with, you know, first to how the government implemented it. The ratio of students wearing the abaya in comparison to the total number of students in France, once more 298 out of 12 million students, and how the government prepared the application of this ban. To quote a lady called Sonia Baques, who is the state secretary in charge of citizenry, she was asked, how are you going to differentiate between a long dress and an abaya? She couldn't answer. She just said, oh, well, when you see it, you know it. Well, that's not very legal. I mean, I wouldn't trust a government that goes with this, you know, basic rule. You know, if I see it, I know it. The second problem we have is a school principal by the, that goes by the name of Carole Zerbi, who is also a member of the number one union in for school principals in France. She said, when she was asked, again, how are you going to differentiate between students who wear it for religious purposes or those who wear it for, you know, because it's fashionable? Well, she said, and this is where it is this should have called for a national outcry. We'll see why it didn't happen, because I got some figures for you. This lady, Carole Zerbi, says, well, if you take a look at some students, you can guess their religious affiliation, and therefore, you can tell them not to wear it. And when the journalist pushed against them, said, so you're basically going to racially profile students. She said, no, the minister has been quite clear about it. We are going to crack down on the abaya. This is where we are today in France. The government that passed a law on, you know, so-called separatism, which actually put civil society on trial, is now targeting Muslim students because they dare to wear long dresses. Now, to the question, how did French society react? First, I'm gonna, you know, be blunt about that. There was no reaction from mosques, no reaction from imams, no reaction from Muslim and Islamic organizations, and no reaction from so-called community leaders. Because they're all terrified since the passing of the anti-separatism law. And you have the right to be scared. We all are human beings. But if you cannot turn your fear into the absolute horizon for everybody else, that because you are scared, the whole of the community cannot move forward. If you are scared, resign and do something else. You cannot hold a position that requires integrity, moral and intellectual integrity, political courage, and then behave like that. Either you can or you cannot. And unfortunately, and I have to call them out on this platform, I already did in French, on Les Idées Libres, which I published a couple of hours ago. These religious figures, whoever they are and whatever their positions are no longer entitled and no longer have the right to speak of modesty, to tell women how to dress, because you cannot on the one hand tell women to wear a headscarf or wear this, you know, dress in a particular way. And the day these women do, and their children do, and then get targeted by the government, you are nowhere to be found to stand for them. And this is where the demagogy, you know, at the highest levels, not only of the government, but also at the highest levels of, you know, community organizations, has to be called out. And these religious figures have failed. Now, if they had an ounce of decency, they would leave, but they haven't left for decades. Because to them, that's their bread and butter. They don't serve the community to serve it. They supposedly serve the community to serve themselves. Be it through a salary, donations, authority, and of course, access to the halls of power in France. Same thing with mosques. We have to remind our audience, and I said that just a couple of years ago when I was analyzing for you the anti-separatism law. The overwhelming majority, if actually all mosques in France, aside from five of them, have signed and supported the Charter of Imams that allows the government to police what imams say in mosques, and they all remained quiet in the face of the passing of the anti-separatism law, which means they either directly or indirectly contributed to shut down and make it impossible for Muslims to organize and exist as citizens. And I'm just gonna, you know, have to forgive me on that, but I'm gonna open another digression on the topic. What I'm calling for, and I told French Muslims from the beginning, if you do not rise in your own mosques, if you do not organize to expel these failed leaders, you are going to continue to see these laws being passed, because as faith communities, the mosque, the place of worship, is central. And who controls the place of worship controls the community. And if you do not control your own mosque, which, by the way, you have funded from your own pockets, if you do not control your mosque, do not control the organizations that you constantly fund with your donations day in, day out, they're going to continue to betray you. And unless we see some uprisings taking place in mosques, by the way, Emmanuel Macron warned against that, and he justified the passing of the anti-separatism law to avoid these uprisings. And he said, should they, quote-unquote, should there be elections where mosque leaders and faith leaders are overthrown, the government should be able to intervene, which is, again, a complete violation of laïcité. Now, coming down to civil society, of course, there was nothing on the left, aside from saying, yeah, this is unfair, etc., etc. There was, of course, nothing from the community level, but the non-religious, let's say, community level, aside from individual stances, you know, taken by, you know, historic activists, many of whom have faced multiple lawsuits in order for the government to shut them down and keep them busy with legal proceedings. Now the question is, how about French society? Well, the situation is quite interesting. Over 70% of French people asked about the Abaya banning were in favor of it. Over 70%. Now, this platform is known to be blunt and, you know, and I haven't hidden my positions, though it cost me, of course, in the courts of law, etc., because, you know, when you call out the government, you have to expect repercussions. But now I'm holding French society responsible. How is it that a French, the whole of society, did not see that as a grotesque diversion to shift attention away from the real problems of the public schools? There is an individual responsibility here. When you see the government, you know, delving into Islamo-diversion, keeping you busy with Muslims in order not to address the problems you are facing, to provide your kids with food, but also with school supplies, the cost of transportation, the capacity for your children to have a proper education in public schools. Not every one of you can afford sending your kids to private schools. Yet, when the government throws under the bus your Muslim neighbors, your Muslim colleagues and their children, you agree with it. And when similar tactics were used against other faith communities, we know what it led to. And of course, I want to keep things, you know, proportionate. But we know exactly what the government is doing. Keep people busy with identity politics and not address their needs. And it is unfortunate that the overwhelming majority of French people have decided to agree with the government, even though it is obvious that this is, again, a case of diverting public opinion and shifting, you know, public scrutiny away from the government's failures to provide proper education to children. So what does this prohibition on the Abaya tell us? I think it would be wrong to narrow this to just an tactic of, you know, diversion to avoid scrutiny. It is a tactic that is part of a much longer war and much more deeply entrenched war against Muslims in France. and I'm weighing my words. You cannot have a government that has for the past 25 years been constantly going after a specific segment of the French population, criminalizing them, brutalizing them, as we saw with the state of emergency, depriving them of their basic human rights, as we saw with the banning of the headscarf in schools. The way the government has constantly put Muslims at the center of everything that is wrong or broken in France. And I'm sorry, there are no reasons to hope for the best so far. Because it's not like the left is up to the challenge. I mean, I will make another podcast on the topic. But right now what's happening in France is literally the rise of the police state thanks to Islamophobia, and Muslims themselves finding it impossible to exist as citizens and now having to sincerely worry for their children. Is there a solution to that? Of course there is. But that would require to redefine the relationship with the government, and I have to say it, for Muslims to redefine their role as citizens. Are they going to remain passive citizens waiting for the government to have some kind of crisis and say, oh my God, this is wrong what we are doing? Or are they going to do like all communities have done in France since the revolution, organize and confront the government? We saw how environmental organizations confronted the government and got their act together and won, and the order, or the executive order to have them shut down, was cancelled by the Council of the State. But no one will lead your struggle but yourself. No one. Thank you for your attention. This was Yasser Louati speaking from the Southside banlieue of Paris. Speak to you soon.